So good morning, everyone. This is not going to be a Dharma talk. That's why we didn't chant and bow beforehand. This is going to be a story. So please get comfortable. Please be really comfortable. This is the day we celebrate the Buddha's birthday. We don't really know when it was, but in Japan, this is the time. The Buddha's birthday is celebrated right in the middle of cherry blossom season, when there's so much beauty and so many flowers. In Japan, the cherry blossom line, moving from south to north as the cherry blossoms come into bloom, is actually part of the weather report. It's very such a strong part of the culture, beautiful part of the culture. So Buddha's birthday is called Hanamatsuri, which means flower festival in Japan. So back in 2011, somebody at Green Gulch Farm, part of San Francisco Zen Center, asked our teacher, Norman Fisher, to write a story for Buddha's birthday, about Buddha's birthday, for their children's program. And he was too busy, so he asked me to do it. And soon after that, the great Tohoku earthquake and tsunami and Fukushima nuclear meltdown happened in Japan. And that was really heavy, heavy in my heart. And so this is the story that came to me for Buddha's birthday. It's a little long, so please be comfortable. Hanako was 10 years old, and her little brother Kenji was 5. They lived with their father on a hillside at the edge of a city called Sendai in northeast Japan. Their mother had died just a year before from a very bad kind of cancer. It had been a terrible year for all of them. Their father had to work extra hard without their mother's help at the nursery. That was the family business, a nursery, not for babies, but for trees and shrubs. It was hard work, but their parents had enjoyed working together, and the nursery looked so beautiful in the spring when one after another the trees and shrubs burst into bloom. First, the pink plum blossoms with their spicy fragrance, then sweet daphne, golden forsythia, all the different kinds of cherry blossoms, and later elegant wisteria and cheerful azaleas. But last year, just as they were getting the plants ready for spring, their mother started having trouble with her back. She thought she'd just strained it lifting a potted tree, which was surprising because she was used to working hard. She was tall and slim, but very strong. She took it easy for a few days, but her back got worse instead of better. So she finally went to the doctor. The news was so bad, their father was afraid to tell them. People kept saying their mother was sure to get better. She was such a strong person. But Hanako could tell from the sadness she saw in her mother's eyes that she would not get better. And in just 6 weeks, she was gone. At first, it seemed like a bad dream, and that maybe they would wake up one morning and she would be there fixing breakfast just like before. Kenji kept asking, "When's Mama coming back?" Until Hanako wanted to punch him. Once she even did. But then she only felt worse. He didn't ask anymore. Now their father looked sad and tired all the time. His elderly parents, Hanako's and Kenji's grandparents, lived next door. The nursery used to be theirs. And before that, grandpa's father's. And before his father, their great-great-grandfather had built the terraces on the side of the hill and planted trees and shrubs where they would be safe if a great tsunami came. The family had lost their farm on the flat land below many years ago when there was a great earthquake and a huge tsunami swept away everything in its path. The oldest son swore he would not go back to rice farming just to see the farm destroyed again. He and his young wife worked hard and saved money until they could buy land on the hillside where they built the nursery. Grandpa liked to tell the story. He'd say, "My grandpa used to say, when times are hard, people need more than food to fill their bellies. They need beauty to lift their spirits, and that's what we grow." Along the roadside, on the way to their school, Grandpa had shown her a stone marker from that long ago time. Grandpa read the carved characters, "Do not build your houses below this point." "I'm glad we live up here," Hanako said. Hanako's grandparents were kind, but with Grandma's bad back and Grandpa's weak lungs, they couldn't help much. Hanako wanted to help more with the nursery, but mostly when she wasn't in school, she had to look after Kenji, which was not easy. They often got mad at each other because their mother wasn't there to teach them patiently how to get along or to show them something interesting outdoors. She had always loved living things, and plants seemed to want to grow for her. Hanako's father had gone to university in the city, thinking he wanted to do a different kind of work. But there he met a tall, quiet girl from Kyoto, whose love of nature made him change his mind. Together, they decided that the nursery on the hill would be the best place to raise a family together. Now, a year after her mother's death, people seemed to think Hanako was doing so well and getting used to her new life without her mother, but really, she missed her more than ever. It made her mad that Kenji seemed to be forgetting her already. He even asked their father, "When can we get a new mama?" Hanako knew she would never want a new mama. Sometimes she would go outside and sit in the nursery, just looking at the buds beginning to swell on the young cherry trees. She wasn't sure if she would be happy or sad to see them bloom this year. Hanako thought things couldn't get much worse, but one day they did. It was March 11th. Earlier that week, there had been a few little earthquakes, but Hanako didn't think much of it. Living in Japan, she was used to earthquakes. She hardly noticed the small ones, and she'd learned at school what to do if a strong one came. It was just before 3 o'clock, and school was almost over when the big quake struck. Hanako felt suddenly dizzy and a little queasy at first. Then she realized it was an earthquake. But it didn't stop. It shook up and down and back and forth. The teacher told them to get under their desks fast. But first they all grabbed the padded hoods inside their desk and put them on, just like they practiced many times in the earthquake drills they had several times a year. Still, the shaking went on. The windows rattled, the lights swayed back and forth from the ceiling. Things started falling off shelves, and a window broke with a terrible splintering sound. The lights went out, and a few children started to cry. They could hear crashing sounds and sirens blaring. It seemed to go on and on. Finally, the shaking came to a stop. Their teacher said, "Please stay still a bit longer until we can be sure it's safe for you to come out. You must be brave." In a moment, the principal came to the door and whispered something to the teacher, then went on. The teacher turned to the children and said, "This was a bigger earthquake than we've ever felt before, and I know you're scared. So let's take some nice deep breaths and try to be calm." So they breathed, all together. "Now I want you to come out very carefully and line up by the door. Keep your hoods on, watch for broken glass, and don't trip. Then we'll all go to the gym, where we'll wait for more news and for your parents to come get you." They had just arrived at the gym and sat down in their class groups when Hanako saw a man come in the door. It was her father. He had Kenji already, carrying him on his back. He must have stopped at Kenji's kindergarten already. It was right on the way, just down the street. How did he get here so fast? Their house was only a 15-minute walk from school, but he must have run the whole way. She was glad he worked at home and not at an office in the city. Hanako ran up to her father. "Papa, is our house all right?" "It's a big mess," he said, "but it's still standing and we can fix it up, I'm sure." "Are Grandpa and Grandma okay?" "Yes, Grandma fell and bumped her head, but she's going to be all right. Their house is a mess too. They're at our house now." "Attention, attention," the principal was shouting. "Please be quiet, everyone. We've just had news that there's a tsunami warning. It could be a bad one. We're asking you all to stay here now until we know more. We're away from the sea and we're on a hill here, so it will be safe. Other people will be coming here for shelter, too. Please try and stay calm, and we'll let you know of any news we get. We only have our cell phones because the power is out." "Papa, what about our house? What about the nursery?" said Hanako. "We're high enough, I'm sure. Besides, we're on the far side of the hill from the ocean." Her father tried to reassure her, but he looked worried. They waited and waited. Some teachers brought snacks from the kitchen, and they passed around juice boxes. Some children took out books or cell phones to play games. But the light wasn't very good from the high windows in the gym. Gradually, more and more parents arrived, and other people, too. They looked upset. Hanako heard one say to her teacher, "It's bad out there, terrible." Finally, the principal called for their attention and announced, "Those of you whose parents are here may leave now. The others, please stay. We can't tell you much, but we do know there's been a terrible tsunami. Sendai is flooded, and there's a big fire out at the waterfront. You can see the smoke from here. Please be careful." As Hanako, Kenji, and their father left the school, they looked out over the city of Sendai, and everything looked strange, hazy, mixed up. Was that water they were seeing? They hurried in the other direction to their house. It was a mess. There was broken glass and things tossed about all over, like some great mad beast had gone on a rampage. One garden shed had collapsed and the trees and shrubs had toppled over in a tangle. They went carefully into the house and found Grandma and Grandpa sitting in the kitchen looking dazed. Grandma had an ice pack on her forehead. They put a few things together that they could eat without cooking, then cleared a space in their living room where they could spread their futons and all snuggled in with their clothes on. It was cold in the house with so many windows broken. As it got dark, they dozed off, only to be woken up again every time the earth would shake again for a few seconds. Finally, they slept for a few hours. The first few days were like a strange adventure. It was like camping out at home. Their father made an outdoor fireplace and grill so they could cook. They were lucky the nursery was like a small farm. They could find enough scrap wood to burn, and there was a water tank full of rainwater, so they could manage better than the people in the city without power and water. But after a week, there was still no power or water, not enough gas, not enough food. Their father had all he could do to clean up the mess and help his parents, let alone trying to save as many of the nursery plants as possible. And every day there were aftershocks, small ones, sometimes strong ones. He decided to send Hanako and Kenji to stay with their other grandmother in Kyoto. She was their mother's mother, and they called her Grandma Sachi. "I don't want to go. I want to stay and help with the nursery," wailed Hanako. But her father was determined. He wanted them to be safe. He talked to Nanae-san, a young woman who helped out at the nursery during the busy season. Some buses were running again, and she was planning to go stay with her relatives in Tokyo for a while. She agreed to take Hanako and Kenji with her and make sure they got on a Shinkansen, the bullet train, for Kyoto at Tokyo Station. They might have to wait in line. It was impossible to get a reservation. Once they were on the train, Nanae-san would call their grandma in Kyoto and let her know which train they'd be arriving on. It all went according to plan. Once they were on the Shinkansen, Hanako was glad Kenji slept most of the way. She needed to think. She gazed out the window as worry swirled through her head. What if Grandma Sachi wasn't there to meet them? How long would they have to stay? Would their father and grandparents be all right? Suddenly she saw something out the window. Could it be? Yes, it was. The great snowy cone of Fujisan, Mount Fuji. It seemed strong, pure, and reassuring. As they passed through Shizuoka, Hanako looked out at rolling hills covered with curving green rows of tea bushes. Somehow they helped her feel a little calmer. Hanako could only remember going to Kyoto to see Grandma Sachi once before, when she was 4 years old. That was before Kenji was born, and she couldn't remember it very well. She never knew her grandpa, because he died just before she was born. But she liked his picture. He looked funny and kind. Grandma Sachi came to see them every year in Sendai. In fact, she traveled a lot. She wasn't as old as their other grandparents. She liked to go hiking in the mountains. She knew all kinds of wildflowers and birds. She'd even traveled to Canada to see the mountains there, and to New Zealand, where they'd just had a bad earthquake too. Hanako had learned about that in school. Suddenly, Hanako startled awake. The conductor was gently shaking her arm. "Next stop, Kyoto," he said. "You better get ready." He helped them get their bags and line up at the door. "Thank you very much," said Hanako politely. "Domo arigatou gozaimashita." And held on tightly to Kenji's hand. She helped him down the steps onto the platform, and the conductor put their bags down beside them. The crowd of people getting off the train surged like a river all around them. As the people moved away toward the exits, Hanako felt panic start to rise up in her. She felt like crying, but stopped herself. She didn't want to scare Kenji. "Where's Grandma?" he said, his voice shaking a little. "I am sure she's just a little late," Hanako replied. Just then they saw a trim figure running lightly towards them, wearing tan slacks and a blue jacket. Her short, straight salt and pepper hair bobbed up and down as she ran. It was Grandmother Sachi. "Welcome, welcome," she said. "I'm so sorry. I was waiting just down there. I was so excited I didn't write down what car Nanae-san said you'd be in." "What a time you've had. You must be exhausted. You've been traveling all day." Her words came tumbling out. Hanako felt suddenly shy. She hadn't seen Grandma Sachi since her mother's funeral just over a year ago. My, you haven't brought much. But don't worry, we'll manage just fine. Here I am chattering away. Let's get you home. Are you hungry?" Hanako said no, and Kenji said yes at the same time. They all laughed. It had been a very long day, so after a light dinner and the first real bath they'd had since the earthquake, they went straight to bed. As they sank into their fresh, soft futons, they were so tired they dropped right off to sleep. But Hanako woke up early in the morning. She got up quietly so as not to wake Kenji, went downstairs, and slid the garden doors open. It was just getting light, and the city was quiet because it was Sunday. Last night, Grandma had said something about Hanako starting school next week. Did that mean they'd be staying a long time? She felt very far from home. She was just beginning to realize how huge the disasters really were. First the earthquake, followed by the tsunami, and then the trouble at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. She'd just seen a little bit on TV before Grandma turned it off. But she'd seen enough to know some towns north of Sendai were almost completely destroyed by the tsunami. Many people had died and many more were missing. She sat gazing out at the garden. It was a small garden, but pretty, with a goldfish pond circled by mossy green stones, an old stone lantern beside it, azalea bushes against the wall, and a cherry tree with a few flowers just starting to open. Hanako was looking up at them when Grandma Sachiko found her there. "Hanako, what are you doing up so early? Come help me get breakfast, okay?" Hanako and Kenji had stayed with Grandma for almost 3 weeks. Hanako had to admit that she liked her new school, except for a group of three girls who seemed to think they ruled the class and who teased her for being a country kid with an old-fashioned name. Sendai wasn't the country, it was a big city, but she couldn't convince them of that. Maybe she was kind of a country girl, she thought, because she knew how to take care of plants, as her mother had taught her. And she was determined not to be ashamed of that. She did wish, though, that she had a sophisticated name like Dana or Kaida. Once Grandma caught her looking thoughtful and asked how things were going at school. Hanako said, "Okay, I guess, but they tease me about my name. They say it's old-fashioned." "Oh dear," said Grandma, "I think Hanako is the very best name for a Japanese girl, especially one from a nursery that sells all kinds of flowering trees and shrubs. Of course, Hana means flower, but most often, you know, it means cherry blossoms. We Japanese love cherry blossoms more than any other flower because they remind us how beautiful and precious life is, even when it doesn't last very long. You know how sometimes a storm comes and the cherry blossoms get blown off the trees when they've only been open a few days? Over the centuries, Japan has had so many earthquakes and tsunamis, typhoons, fires, floods, epidemics of disease. We've had to learn the hard way how to live simply and appreciate the beauty right before our eyes." Hanako was quiet for a few moments, and then she asked, "Grandma, do you miss Grandpa?" "I still do sometimes, even after more than 10 years. But it's more of a gentle ache now, not the sharp pain it used to be. And I smile when I think of him instead of crying." "Don't you ever want to have another husband?" Hanako asked. "You're not so old." Grandma laughed. "I don't think so. I like the freedom to travel when I want and stay up late at night reading. And I have good friends. I'm not too lonely. But, you know, your father really is too young, still young. And it's hard for him to take care of the nursery and you two and help your grandparents. I'm sure he really misses your mama, but in a little while he might need to find someone to love him and help him." "But I can help him," said Hanako. "Of course you can, but you'll have more and more schoolwork as you get older. Kenji needs a mama more than you do right now. But the right person will know she can't replace your mama. She'll know it will take time for you to make a little extra room in your heart for her." "I don't know," said Hanako. "I think I'll go watch TV before bed." That night before she fell asleep, she remembered Nanae-san who helped them get to Tokyo. She was nice and young, kind of like a big sister. She wondered if her father liked Nanae-san. No, she stopped herself. She was not going to think about that. One evening, Grandma Sachi said, "Do you know what day tomorrow is?" "Hanamatsuri." "Flower festival," said Hanako. "I heard it at school." "Hanamatsuri?" said Kenji. "How come Hanako has a matsuri? I want a Kenji matsuri." "Silly, it's not for me. It's for the Buddha's birthday," said Hanako. "Who's the Buddha?" asked Kenji. "Well," Grandma said. This is Hanako. "Well, Grandma, we never went to Hanamatsuri in Sendai." "Oh, I suppose it was a busy time of year for your parents," said Grandma. "Shall I tell you about the Buddha's birthday? And tomorrow we can go to Chionin Temple for Hanamatsuri." "Yes, yes," they both cried. "Okay, sit here beside me and I'll tell you." They snuggled in, one on each side of her. A very long time ago, in a faraway country with high snowy mountains and hot dusty plains, a baby was born who would grow up to be called Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakyamuni means the wise man of the Shakya people, and Buddha means the awakened one. That baby would become one of the greatest and wisest teachers the world has ever known. But he wasn't called Shakyamuni Buddha then. His father's name was Suddhodana, and he was the king of the Shakya people in that part of India. He was a powerful and well-respected ruler. Queen Maya was his wife, and she was kind and beautiful, beloved by all. She knew right away that there was something special about her baby. When he was just a tiny seed beginning to grow inside her, she dreamed that a great white elephant with six tusks came to her and touched her belly gently with its trunk. At that, she felt a pure, radiant light surround and fill her with a deep peace and joy, unlike anything she had ever experienced. She knew the child she carried would be a gift to the entire world, not just to her own family. When the time came near for the child to be born, Queen Maya traveled with her servant women to where her parents lived, as was the custom then, just like it used to be here in Japan. On the way, she stopped to rest in a lovely garden in Lumbini and suddenly realized that her baby was coming. She stood under a flowering tree, held onto a branch to steady herself, and gave birth to the baby right there in the garden. The old stories say that four shining gods caught the baby before he could fall to the ground. Sweet warm water poured from the sky to bathe him, and many colored flowers fell all around as his mother and her servant women rejoiced, along with all beings on earth and in the heavens. As soon as he was born, the baby stood up, took 10 steps to the north, and looked around in all directions. "How could he do that? He was just born," Hanako cut in. "I guess he was a very unusual baby," Grandma continued, "because the next thing he did was to point down to the earth with one hand and up to the sky with the other. Then he proclaimed, 'Between heaven and earth, I am the one who will become Buddha, honored throughout the world.'" "Wow, what a smart baby," said Hanako. "I'm the one," said Kenji, and did a little dance move, pointing up with one hand and down with the other. "Well, every baby is a baby Buddha in a way," said Grandma, "so perfect and new. That's how I felt when I saw your mama and Uncle Hiroki when they were first born." "What happened next?" asked Hanako. "Well, King Suddhodana arrived, and they went to Queen Maya's parents' home. The king was delighted and tremendously proud of his baby son. He was sure he would become a great king, perhaps even more powerful than himself. He named the baby boy, Siddhartha, the one who accomplishes his goal. A week after Siddhartha was born, an old wise man arrived and asked to see the child. He said he had heard the gods rejoicing that a wondrous child had been born who would relieve the suffering of humankind. When the wise man saw the child, his face lit up with joy, and then tears came to his eyes. 'What is it?' asked the king. 'Is something terrible going to happen to my son?' 'No, no,' replied the wise man. 'I'm only weeping because I know I will not live long enough to hear him teach the Dharma, the way to live in peace and happiness. I am old and will not live much longer, but he will live a long life, and his teaching will be of benefit to many beings.'" The king was not at all happy to hear this. He wanted this fine son of his to follow in his own footsteps and become a great ruler. He decided that he would not let his son leave the palace to go to school, but instead he would bring teachers to the palace. He would give Siddhartha all the toys, games, and friends he wanted so that he would be happy staying inside the palace grounds, which were wide and beautiful, with deer and peacocks wandering freely about. The king did not want his son to see how hard people's lives were in the city, in the villages and countryside. If he could protect him, surely the boy would take his place as king one day. But one thing very sad happened. When Siddhartha was just a little baby, his mother, Queen Maya, suddenly grew ill and died. Oh no, said Hanako, just like us. But the baby Buddha hardly had any time at all with his mama. Yes, said Grandma, but I think he never forgot her for the rest of his life. King Suddhodana knew that baby Siddhartha needed a mother, so he married Queen Maya's sister, Mahaprajapati. Was she nice? Asked Kenji. Oh yes, said Grandma. She loved him very much and took good care of him. As he grew older, she told him stories about his beautiful mother so he would not forget her. And many years later, when he became the Buddha, she became one of his disciples and helped other women to become disciples too. So he didn't become a king? Asked Hanako. No, he didn't. Even though King Suddhodana gave him all the training he would need to be king someday, Siddhartha learned how to ride a horse and shoot a bow and arrow. He learned reading and writing, mathematics and science, drawing and painting. He was very talented and succeeded at everything he did. One day, when he was about 10, just your age, Hanako, his father decided to let him attend a spring festival for the opening of the farming season. An ox decorated with flowers would be used to plow a special field. The king would lead the ceremony and offer prayers for a good harvest. At first, Siddhartha was excited to be leaving the palace. It was a beautiful day and the scent of flowers drifted in the air. But as the ceremony dragged on, Siddhartha got tired of listening to prayers he didn't understand and wandered off to the edge of the field. He sat down cross-legged beneath a rose apple tree, closed his eyes, and felt the movement of his breath in and out. He felt the warm sun filtering softly through the leaves of the trees and heard the tinkling song of a stream running through the valley behind him. He lost all sense of time and even of his own body sitting there. He was simply part of everything around him. I do that sometimes at the nursery, said Hanako. Yes, me too, when I'm hiking in the mountains, said Grandma. I'm a little different than most Japanese. I like to go to the mountains alone. You're brave, Grandma, said Hanako. I think you are too, Hanako. I mean, especially this past year. She continued. Mahaprajapati came looking for Siddhartha and saw him sitting there so still and peaceful. She thought to herself, ah, I see this is my son's true nature. I know nothing will be able to stop him from becoming a Buddha. I must prepare my heart to let him go for the benefit his teaching will bring to all beings. When the king heard where his son had been, he felt a pang of fear. Was it true what the old wise man had said when his son was first born? The king was more determined than ever to prevent that from happening. As his son grew older, he made sure he received the most delicious food, the most wonderful music, and beautiful dancing girls to entertain him. For a long time, everything went just as the king had planned. Siddhartha grew into a handsome and accomplished young man. His father even found just the right wife for him. Yasodhara was as beautiful and kind as his mother, Queen Maya, had been, and soon they had a fine baby boy. Now Siddhartha had everything he could possibly need to be happy, but he felt uneasy. He wondered what life was like beyond the palace walls, and he decided to find out. He summoned his manservant and made a secret plan to leave the palace early the next morning. The first thing he saw outside the palace gates was a man who was very sick. He was extremely thin and weak, and there were sores all over his body. Siddhartha was frightened and repelled. He had never seen such suffering before. Take me back, he cried to his manservant. I guess nobody in his family ever got cancer, said Hanako. Yes, he lived a very fortunate life, said Grandma, and his father managed to protect him all through his childhood. But parents can't protect their children from everything, not forever, even if they do their very best. Said Hanako. Grandma continued. Back inside the palace, Siddhartha was ashamed of himself. Is this what happens to people in this world? How can I have been so ignorant? What good can I do stuck here in the palace? I must see more. I must understand. He decided he would go out again the very next morning. This time, before they had gone far from the palace, they saw a very old woman crouching by the roadside. Her back was bent almost in half, her eyes cloudy and dim, her face like a cracked and furrowed field in the dry season. She held out a small empty bowl. Siddhartha knelt beside her and asked, "Old woman, where is your family? Is there no one to take care of you?" "No, kind sir, they are all gone. My husband died 15 years ago, and my 3 daughters all have their own families and cannot take me in. My only son was killed in the war when he was 22. I'm just waiting now for the end." Siddhartha shivered as she spoke. He reached into his bag and gave her a sweet and a few coins, all he had brought with him. "Be at peace, old woman," he said, and turned back toward the palace.
"Grandma, who will help you when you get old?" Hanako asked.
"Don't worry. Uncle Hiroki and Aunt Masako will take me in, but I hope that won't be for quite a few years yet." That evening, back in the palace, Siddhartha felt sad and helpless. Was this really the way people lived outside the walls of his luxurious and protected life? Would even his parents, the king and queen, grow old like that? Again, he decided he must learn more. The third day, Siddhartha and his manservant left the palace and went out into the countryside. Along the road, they passed a dead dog. And a short way further, they came to the body of a man lying dead, just like the dog, with flies crawling on him. The next day, right after breakfast, and vultures, flies crawling on him and vultures flying overhead. "Oh," Siddhartha cried, "is there no one to attend to this man's body properly?" "No, sire, this is how it is for the poorest of the poor," his manservant replied, shaking his head at his master's ignorance. This time Siddhartha did not turn back. He knew it was no use to hide. Now he had seen the way the world really was. He had seen that in human life we cannot avoid sickness, old age, and death, no matter how rich we are and how high we build walls around our houses. But how could he live in such a world? Lost in thought, he forgot where he was. Suddenly he looked up and saw a man with long hair and a simple robe sitting very still beneath a tree. He was thin but healthy. His eyes were closed, and he had the most peaceful expression on his face. "Who is that man?" Siddhartha asked his servant. "That is the wise man, Alara Kalama," he answered. "Perhaps if I become his disciple, I can learn how to find peace in this world of suffering," thought Siddhartha. He went back to the palace, and that night he made a very hard decision. He decided to leave his sheltered life, his parents, his wife and son, and set out on a journey. When he learned the answers to his questions, he would come back and teach his family, and he would spend the rest of his long life traveling and teaching many people the way of true happiness and freedom. Grandma looked down and realized that Kenji was sound asleep. Hanako looked tired and thoughtful. I think the story of how Siddhartha became Shakyamuni Buddha will have to wait for another time, she said. If we're going out for Hana Matsuri tomorrow, you'd better get to bed. After the story, Hanako felt somehow sad and peaceful at the same time. As soon as she crawled under her futon and put her head on the pillow, she fell right to sleep. The next day, right after breakfast, they all got dressed for Hana Matsuri. Grandma put on a beautiful lavender-gray kimono with a pattern of white wisteria flowers. She went to a chest and pulled out a kimono just the right size for Hanako. "This was your mother's," she said. "I was hoping it would fit you." It was a beautiful sky blue with pale pink cherry blossoms spiraling around it as though they were blowing in the wind. Hanako could only say,
Oh. She looked up at her grandma. Her grandma's eyes were wet with tears, but she was smiling too. Grandma had even bought... Grandma had even bought a bright red summer kimono for Kenji to wear. When they were all ready, they set out down the street and caught a bus to Maruyama Park. The cherry blossoms were in full bloom. Now and then a gust of spring breeze would set pale pink petals swirling through the air, just like on Hanako's kimono. This is one of the most popular places for cherry blossom viewing, but there aren't many people out this year, Grandma remarked. People don't feel right picnicking and drinking sake under the cherry blossoms when people up north are having such a hard time. Hanako wished her father could be there with them and wondered if he was lonely. They went through the huge gate to Chionin Temple and up to the main hall. At the entrance, a young monk handed each of them a card in the shape of a lotus petal, with a picture of the baby Buddha on it, pointing up to the sky and down to the earth. Can you see them? Just outside the door was a small platform covered with a roof decorated with flowers. On the platform was a bronze basin of water with a statue of the baby Buddha standing in the middle. "It's not water, it's sweet tea," said Grandma. "It's to wash the baby Buddha." First they bowed in gassho with palms together, and Grandma lit a stick of incense for each of them to offer. Then they each took a turn ladling sweet tea over the baby Buddha three times. There was even a step so that small children could reach. When it was Hanako's turn, she bowed her head a moment and said silently, "Baby Buddha, please help me not to worry so much. I know sometimes really bad things happen, and we all just have to help each other. And I love Grandma Sachi, but I hope we can go home soon so I can help Papa with the nursery. And please help all the people who lost their homes in the tsunami." They walked back through the park and stopped to have a treat of vanilla ice cream with fruit and sweet red bean paste. "Thank you, Grandma, for taking care of us," said Hanako, and gave Grandma a hug. "But do you think we can go home soon? I want to help Papa clean up the nursery. The little cherry trees will be blossoming soon." "I think it won't be too much longer now," Grandma said. "Your Papa says they have power now, and water too, but still no gas for cooking. He'd like you to come back soon. I think he misses you." "I talked to Nanae-san in Tokyo too. She wants to go back and help. So maybe you can take the train up to Tokyo and go with her." "Yay, I want to go home," said Kenji. Hanako said nothing. That night before bed, Hanako put her lotus petal card with the baby Buddha on the low table where she kept her school books. She looked at him, put her hands in gassho, and whispered, "I know it will be hard, but I still want to go home. We have to grow more trees and shrubs to make up for all the ones that got ruined in the earthquake. People will need beautiful flowers next spring. You'll help us, won't you?" She bowed and then crawled between the futons and dropped off to sleep with visions of cherry blossoms swirling in her head. Owari. The end. So thank you for listening to this story for Buddha's birthday. I extracted the Buddha's birthday part and sent it off to Green Gulch Farm. And I'm not even sure if they ever used it, because I then found out that it was supposed to be for preschoolers. But we used this. I found out that they used it at Great Vow Monastery, and we've used the story here ever since at Mountain Rain. So thank you for listening to the whole story, the story within the story. And now we'll do a service, and we'll just chant the Metta Sutta. So those of you who have maybe your PDF open, you can chant along. And if you know it, that makes it easy.